And we're holding on the top line of Mem Gimel Amud Aleph. We started learning yesterday about the Treifas. We talked about the 18 that it says in our Mishnah, which the Mishnah hadn't given a number for. We said Tanu Devei Rabbi Shmuel also said there were 18. We said that in the end, the lists are not necessarily the same ones. There may be, in particular, there's a bunch of ones that Amoraim listed and that are mentioned in Braises that are not explicitly mentioned in our Mishnah, but we came out with saying that both the Mishnah and Tanu Devei Rabbi Shmuel would agree that there's 18 basic Treifas, just they would differ on which ones are and aren't included. So the Gemara continues, Amar Ola, Ches Mine Treifas Nemro L'Moshe B'Sinai. There are 8 basic kinds of Treifas that are said to Moshe at Sinai. Meaning, when we said 18, what that means is, so we had, for example, we had a bunch of different cases of a puncture in a vital organ. Or we had a number of cases where an organ is where something is broken or missing or what have you. So if we talk about, so if we break it down like that, then we have 18. But if we talk about more generally, counting, for example, all punctures as one thing, all breaks as one thing, etc., then you have 8 basic types. Nekuva, where an organ has a hole in it, which we had a few examples of in the Mishnah. Rashi points out, by the way, that we're going to have a number. Now, these are going to be very general categories, but each of them breaks down into a lot of specifics, meaning in particular, for example, when we talk about the lungs, we're going to learn about later on in the Torah that there are various cases where there's a spot on the lungs that's a different color, and it makes the animal treifa. Now, here, we're going to have a list over here. It's not going to include changing color, but Rashi explains that basically what that means is when it has a different color than it's supposed to, it means that there's some kind of infection or whatever it is over there, which eventually it's going to end up getting punctured. So therefore, we count it as part of Nekuva, even though right now there's no hole there yet. So therefore that's Nekuva. Or Psukka, where something was cut. For example, we have an emission of the windpipe or the spinal cord being cut. Netula, where something is missing, for example, a Mishnah had said where the liver is missing. Vahasura, or where it's missing, which would mean even that it's missing, congenitally. Or that doesn't even have to be. Rashi points out, for example, we're going to have later on, again, when we talk about the lung, we're going to talk about the lung is supposed to have a particular structure to it. It has a certain number of lobes on the right and on the right lung and on the left lung. So if you have missing lobes or interchanged lobes or whatever, we're going to talk about it with that over there, then that's included in chasera, because then you have something that's missing. There's a lobe missing, or there's a lobe misplaced, meaning, in other words, that's missing from where it belongs. So chasera includes all that kind of thing. The Rambam also points out, for example, that the difference is that, for example, chasura means whether it's congenitally missing or whether it was surgically or whatever removed afterwards, as opposed to netula means that it's only a problem if it was, we are talking about things where it's only a problem if it was removed, but if it was born without it, then it would be kosher. Okay, so you have those 4. Next, krua, you have ripped. We learned in the Mishnah we have the basar ha-choifes, we learned actually as one of the Shev Shmeitzer, one of the 7 statements at Amoraim, we said that you have where the muscles, or the membrane rather, that covers most of the keres, most of the rumen, the first stomach of the animal, if that's ripped, it's treifa. We had in the Mishnah also actually where most of the outside layer of it is ripped, so that's called krua. Udrusa, then you have an animal that was clawed by a predator, as we started talking about yesterday a little bit in the Mishnah, and we're going to talk about it in more detail later on in our parak, that's in Beis and Gimel. Nefula, an animal that fell off a roof, which we mentioned in the Mishnah, where then there's concern that internal organs of it may have been damaged. The last one was Shvura, and then things of breakages. For example, we said in the Mishnah that if a certain number of the ribs are broken. So those are the 8. And again, Rashi points out some of these include subcategories. For example, again, Nekuva having a hole includes also, for example, changes in the color of the lungs, for example, where eventually a hole is going to develop over there. Some of the other ones that we mentioned before, we talked about yesterday, Gluda, where an animal's skin has been flayed off. So that would be included, Rashi says, in Netula, in removed. There's something that was removed that's supposed to be there, namely the skin. We have nechtechu ragleha. If its legs were chopped off above a certain point, that would be included in chasura where it's lacking something. And so forth, and you have various other things that we mentioned yesterday are all included in one or another of these things. The Rishonim bring a siman for this, the eight words over here, the siman for them is don chonak nefesh, which literally means don strangle the soul, but it stands for these eight things, putting them in a different order. Jerusa, nekuva, that's don. Chonak would be chasura, netula, and krua. And nefesh would be nefula, psuka, and shvur. Okay, you have three nuns over there, so you can slot them in wherever you want, but that's how that helps you remember all the eight of them. Now, why does Ula have to say that? Gemara says, la'apuki la'chusa de rochesh ba'papa. That would come to exclude the case that we learned yesterday that rochesh ba'papa says if the kidney has a la'chusa, has damage or an infection or whatever in it. So that would not be included. Ula would disagree with that. Now, Rashi says, well, why not? The same way as we say, for example, that a change in color in the lungs means that eventually the lung is going to be punctured. So why don't we say the same thing? A change in color or in the contents or whatever of the kidney means that eventually the kidney is going to develop a hole. Rashi says, because no, later on in the paddock, we're going to say that if the kidney has a hole, the animal's still kosher. So, but Rochesh Bapapa is saying specifically where there's lakusa, where there's damage to it, which we'll talk about in a second, what lakusa means, then it would be treif. So Ula is disagreeing with that and saying that no, that wouldn't be counting. Now, what lakusa means, there's quite a bit of discussion about it. It can include an actual injury to it. The Gemara is going to talk about soon based on a pasuk in Iyov. It can include things like Rashi learns that it includes things like infection where there's pus in it. That would be called lakusa. So again, the idea is Rashi is saying, fine, there's pus in it. There's an infection. Eventually, the infection may cause a hole, but it doesn't matter because later in the parak, we're going to learn that a hole in the kidney does not make the animal treif. There are other Rishonim who discuss, and many other Rishonim discuss, and say that, and in that category you have, we're going to learn later on in the paragraph, that for example, there's a difference what kind of liquid you find inside the kidney. If you find in there pus is one thing, later on we're going to learn that if you find in there clear liquid, then it would be kosher, because with the Pashtus, when we say clear liquid, I guess we don't mean urine, there's no reason to even think that would be a problem. But Pashtus, when we say clear liquid, they mean that there's fluid build up in the tissues, edema, as they call it in medicalese, but nevertheless, it wouldn't make the animal treif. But in any case, a number of Rishonim learn that lakusa actually means where the kidney is like decaying, and eventually, if you pick it up when you shech the animal, if you pick up the kidney, it'll fall apart because it's so infected or decayed or whatever. So it comes out in any case that Ula is disagreeing with that whole point. With that said, a number of Achronim points out that the poskim all bring this list of eight treifas. And consider it definitive, and yet they do also bring Rochesh's din about Loxapolia, about if the polia has this lakusa, this damage or infection or whatever in it. So they discuss a variety of different ways how to reconcile that, because it sounds like if Gemara is saying over here that Ula disagrees with Rochesh, then how can we hold like both of them? So they give a number of different answers. It may be indeed that there are different definitions of lakusa. Again, there can be a difference whether we talk about just that it's infected and there's pus in it versus when we talk about that it's so badly deteriorated that it falls apart. One of those Ula might agree with and he just disagrees with the other one. It might be that Ula would say, sure, it's a treifa, but it's not included in this list of eight that are halacha l'moshe nisim. That's a separate kind of treifa that's not in this category, but it's not in any of these categories, but nevertheless, I agree that it's treifa, and there's a few other possibilities. Okay. The Gemara continues. Amar Chiya bar Rava. So ches treifas yesh ben imam, on the side of here it says it should be chiyah bar rav. In any case, ches treifas yesh ben nekuva. Within what we just said, that one of the basic types of treifas is nekuva, where a particular organ has a hole in it, you should know. So it's chiyah bar rav or chiyah bar rav rather. There are eight subcategories within that. There are eight internal organs that if they have holes in them are going to be a problem. Namely, we listed them in the Mishnah, where you have a hole in the esophagus, in the, uh, So you go through the list over there. You have the esophagus, the membrane around the brain, the heart, the lung, the fourth stomach, the intestines, the keras acnemis, as we'll define later on in the perek, as that is what that is, and the hemsis or vesicosis, the second and third stomachs, which have holes in them. So those are the eight. The second and third, by the way, they have very similar roles in the digestive process, which is why they're counted together, especially because they actually have, like we talked about yesterday, a sphincter that connects one to the other through which the food filters as it gets broken down. Okay, in any case, so Chiya Bar Rav says there are eight such traits. In Toma Tess, you're going to argue that really there are nine, because we're Mora. The ninth one would be the gallbladder, which we learned in the Mishnah. You should know, it says Chiya Bar Rav, Rav Yosi ben Yehuda Katonimah. That's only Rav Yosi ben Yehuda saying that, and the other Chachamim disagree with him. The Tanya, as we learn in the Braise, Mikva HaKeva, Nikvu HaDakim, if the Keva, the fourth stomach, has a hole, or the intestines have a hole, Trefa, then the animal is Trefa. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ach Nikva HaMara, and Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda says also if the gallbladder has a hole. So implying that only he holds that way, and the Chachamim disagree. Now, what about, we also had other cases, we learned something that Rabbi Avira says that among the Shev Shmaitza, among the seven statements of Amoraim, we had one of them that said that if there's a hole in the spleen, then the animal would be Trefa. So fine, also Chiya Bar Rav would disagree with that, says Rashi. On the other hand, Chassam Sofer says maybe not, because when it comes to the spleen, you actually have a din where if there's a certain amount of thickness of the spleen left below the hole, and it's still kosher, so therefore it's not really in the category of nekev. It's a different category, really. Okay. In any case, so Chiya Bar Rav says there were only eight, because the gallbladder, which Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda counts, doesn't count, he said, and the one that Rabbi Avira says about the spleen doesn't count either. So the Gemara brings here a simon for the next few statements that the Gemara is going to say in this connection that Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yosef is going to say in the name of Rabbi Yechonon. This is a simon with key words from the next few statements that the Gemara is going to have. The first one says halacha. The second one is the first two are both going to be halacha. The third one is going to be something about chibur, about being connected, and so on and so forth. So it's a simon for each one of them. They talk about I've mentioned before, the Zavid Powder likes to talk about explanations of the Kabbalah for these simonim. So here also he has one about the Mora and Kukavan representing various things in Ruchnius. So there's also an interesting explanation that it means that a Chover is also a nickname for a Talmud Chacham. So Hilchos Chover, the rule that a Chover has to know for his own life, is Kezayis Mora of a Kukavan. He has to know that he should have only a Kezayis, only a small amount of Mora of bitterness in his life. When it comes a time, a person needs to have a certain bitterness over where he's standing in Avodas Hashem, but it shouldn't overwhelm him. And vice versa, the Kurkavan is the gizzard of a bird where it digests its food, also representing that a Talmud Chacham, as a Chaver, has to not indulge himself in food and drink and other life's pleasures too much. Have a kezayis, but don't go overboard. So first of all, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yosef, Amar Rabbi Yechon, halacha for Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda. The halacha is in fact that Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda, that if the gallbladder has a hole in it, then it is treif. Especially because we have our Stam Mishnah when appointed him. So the chover and the simon over there was not chover as in connected, but chover as in chavre, his colleagues. So Maya had relay chavre le Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda. What did his colleagues, Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda's colleagues, the other chachamim, what did they answer him? Why they hold that the gallbladder having a hole is not enough to make the animal treif? They answered him based on a pasuk in Iyov, in one of Iyov's monologues, where he's talking about how badly he's suffering and how he feels his friends are not being sympathetic and all. He says, "Mishpech la'aretz mirei rossi." Hashem pours out my bile on the ground. So in other words, it sounds like he's saying that his gallbladder has partially been punctured, and the gall, the bile that gets stored in it, is spilling out. And yet, Adain Iyov Kayim. And yet, Iyov is still alive. So you see, therefore, that having a hole in the gallbladder is not enough to make a person treif. You see that Iyov survived that and went on to live long after that as well. So therefore, you see that it's not necessarily fatal. Now, we have talked about yesterday what Tosfos says, that maybe there are differences in traces of animals versus people. Tosfos has said that's particularly as far as the skull, as far as other body parts, there may not really be such a difference. But in fact, we would say that what applies to a person does apply to an animal as well. So therefore, that's how the Gemara can be proving over here. There is also a point, you could say, I mean, who says that Iyuv means it literally, he's saying figuratively. But fine, even the figurative expression, when a pasuk has to have a physical meaning. So wouldn't say, Yishbach ha'aretz me'erasi, so to say the Chachamim, to Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda, were it not for the fact that, in fact, such a thing is survival. Omolahem, said Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda, says to them, that's not a proof. In maskirin ma'isin nisi. You can't bring proof from things of nisi. It was a mess that he survived such a thing, that's not a normal thing. If you're not going to say that, if you're going to say that it was a natural thing, what about Eev continues? It actually not continues. Earlier in that same passage, Eev says on himself, Yifalach kill Yosef of Yasmo. He wounds, he breaks through my kidneys, and he has no mercy. Now, we just said before that a lakusa, that a damage to the kidney, is enough to make an animal trick. So, mikochaye, would a person be able to survive such a thing if his kidneys are cut through like that? So then you see that not. Elam nisa shiny, obviously it was a nes. Dichtib, because the pasuk says, actually, when Hashem tells the sultan that you have permission to harm Eev, he tells him exactly, says in the pasuk, that's nach shishmer, only guard his life. So therefore, in other words, Hashem is telling the sultan, you have permission, fine, you've challenged me, and you've said that Eev is a tzaddik only because he has good in this world, and even after he lost his possessions and his children and all that, he still never touched his body itself. Fine, that says Hashem to the sultan, you have permission to harm his body, achas nach shishmer, but make sure that you guard his life and don't go so far as to kill him. The Gemara even has an expression, Rav Abasra, like the sultan has to walk a very fine line over there. It's a great sire for him. He has to do the utmost tortures to Eev, but not cross the line to kill it. So therefore, Rav Yosef ben Yehuda argues it's mais and nisim. It's a nest that Eev was able to survive such a thing a normal person would not. So therefore, Hochanami misses shiny the same way you can say as far as when he's complaining about his gallbladder being punctured, and Yishbech Loris Meirasi also means that misses shiny is different when it's a nest and you can't bring a proof for it as far as the halachos of Tirithus. Now, here's where Tosfos points out that again, when we discussed a few minutes ago what lakhusa, what it means damage or injury or whatever through the kidneys, again, one such type of lakhusa is where you have where it has clear fluid inside it, which again, it means there's something wrong with the kidney. There's fluid building up in it, but nevertheless, it's not treifa. So who says, maybe over here, when he says, what he means is that he has that kind of thing, he has edema, fluid is building up in his kidneys, but not, and making him uncomfortable, but not that it's actually deadly. So what we're talking about is yifalach, yeah. Really means he slices through. So he slices through my kidneys, and now later on, the Gemara is going to point out the reason we don't consider that one of the treifas is because you could cure it with medication, like we talked about yesterday. In principle, treifas, we talked about yesterday the different opinions, whether treifa chaya or treifa enechaya, but we touched on the idea over there that even that sometimes that certain things the Gemara considers there are cures for them that were available in those times, and therefore they're not considered a treifa, and this would be an example of it. But the fact is, Tosfos says we never find that they gave Eev any kind of those kinds of medicines that should cure him. So therefore the question is, how could he live without having that treatment? And here we don't find that Eev received any such treatment. So he's saying that it was a nes, that it was because Hashem told the sultan to be careful not to allow Eev to die, and that's why he didn't die, even though objectively these kinds of things would in fact be deadly. But as we said, the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef, that in fact if the gallbladder has a hole in it, it is treif. And as far as Eev, it means it was maisinism. Another statement, the halacha is like the opinion that says, later on in our perek, when we talk about if the liver is missing, then now the Mishnah had said, the Gemara is going to ask in a second, that the Mishnah had said that if the animal is straight, only if the liver is missing and none of it is left. But we're going to learn later on in the perek, which is an opinion that says that if a kezias of it is left, then it's fine. So now Rabbi Yosef is telling us, and the name is Rabbi Yochanan, the halacha is like that, there has to be at least a kezias in it left. We'll learn later on Daf Mem Vav, what part of the liver that has to be that there's a kezias left of it. Uniquely, by the way, the liver is is the only, or I think it's the only organ in the body that can, that in the animal body or in the human body, that can regenerate itself as parts of it are missing. Most other, most other organs, if some of them, if they're missing one part, then fine. What'll happen is it'll heal. You'll have a scar tissue over there, but it won't be like the original, won't be like the original functional tissue. But with the liver, it will actually regenerate, which is how people can donate part of their liver, for example. So therefore, as long as there's a kazayis left, then it has what to regenerate from. But the Gemara asks me, Amar Rabbi Yochanan Vachi, did Rabbi Yochanan really say that? That you need a kazayis? Halacha k'stam mishnah. Rabbi Baba Chana tells us in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that the halacha is like a stam mishnah. When we have a stam, both Rashi and Tosfos don't have Rabbi Baba Chana over here, they just have Rabbi Yochanan saying it directly. In any case, the halacha is like a stam mishnah. When you have a mishnah without any opinion attached to it, then Rabbi Yochanan says the halacha is like that. Because it means, in other words, when Rebbe was compiling the Mishnayos and finalizing them in the form that we have them, it means that he found that this was the majority opinion, and therefore there's no reason to attach a name to it. So, Utnan, and yet our Mishnah had said, Nitlak Tavit Vilein Nishtayim, and a claim that only if the liver was removed and there's nothing left of it, so Honishtayim Kshera, implying that there's something left of it, it is kosher. Asagad Vilein have a Kazayas, even if it's not a Kazayas. So you have a contradiction between two statements of Rabbi Yochanan. And the answer is Amidoyim Ninu Valdi with Rabbi Yochanan. In fact, there are different Amidoyim who argue what Rabbi Yochanan said. So the Gemara uses this answer in a few places. One, some Amidoyim learned that Rabbi Yochanan said a general rule, Halacha k'stam mishnah. Others have not learned that rule from him, and therefore they need individual statements from him about in this case or in that case, then the halacha is like him. So Rashi and Tosfos both point out there is later on in the parak when we learn the next Mishnah, we're going to say that the Mishnah is going to mention over there that if part of the liver is missing, then the animal is kosher. It says if the liver is removed but there's a kazayis left of it. So that's also a stam mishnah, but fine. The point is that fine. So you have two stam mishnayas. What makes Rabbi Yochanan prefer one over the other? Another explanation Tosfos brings is that when the next mishnah says that it's kosher if there's a kazayis left, why would Rabbi Yochanan have to say halacha kamosha if he already says halacha k'stam mishnah? Doesn't that show that he doesn't hold halacha k'stam mishnah? And the answer again would be that different amiroim argue what Rabbi Yochanan actually heard. Now the next thing, the next statement is that, namely, that Rabbi Yitzchak Rabbi Yosef said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, or different Jew says, not De Omar, but rather Ve Omar, this would be the next statement in the chain of statements that we're saying. So far we had Hilchos, the fact that the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef Yehuda, the cover, about what Rabbi Yosef Yehuda's Haverim answered him, Kizayis, about the have Kizayis of the liver left, and now the next one would be Mara, again, about the gallbladder. We just said that if the gallbladder has a hole in it, then the animal is chafed, because we follow Rabbi Yosef Yehuda in that, but if the gallbladder has a hole, the covered setamta, but the liver, the gallbladder hangs off the liver on one side, and one end of it is very stuck to the liver. So therefore, where they're stuck together, then the covered setamta, there the liver closing up the hole, shera, then the animal would be kosher, even appointed of Yosef ben Yehuda. Because in other words, there you have that. So there, it's not a hole where it's going to leak out into the body cavity. Now Rashi has a shita that the reason why that works is because the connection there, the place where the gallbladder hangs and is connected to the liver, that connection was always there. So in other words, the point is, had there been a hole there and then later on something developed to cover it, then that would be no good. But here we're saying that the connection was there all along, and therefore it's fine.
So Rashi over here, there's Rashi later on, we're going to talk about soon, talks about that's a general rule. Whenever we talk about that there's a hole which is covered up by something that's kosher, it always has to be, Rashi learns, that it means that it has to be that the covering was there all along. So that hole was never really considered a hole, because to begin with, there was something there blocking, and sealing the hole. A bit of a different explanation. So there's different ways Achronim learn a couple of different ways that Achronim learn Rashi. Does he mean just that? But he means that, in other words, that as long as it was there at that time when the hole developed, that organ was already there? Or does it mean that the Drisha learns a little differently? It means that what seals it was there when the animal was first created. A Nafkamina, I guess, would be if you have that, it's the kind of thing where it's a natural sealant, but it developed only later in the animal's life. Let's say, for example, as a particular organ grew larger. Tavos Shur actually brings a point. We're going to learn later on in the paragraph when we talk about holes in the lungs, that you have a case where the hole is right next to the chest wall, and it's good. And Rashi says that that's considered a good sealing. And the Tavos Shur points out that it comes out from the way it is over there, even if it wasn't immediately when the hole developed. It would still be kosher, implying that it doesn't have to be that it's there all along, as long as, in this case, the chest wall existed there from when the animal was born, and therefore it's fine. So Achronim discussed back and forth different opinions within that is accepted lahalacha. There is an opinion of the Ra'ah that says that no, only when it comes with that only when it comes to the lung and the only when it comes to the lung and the esophagus, which the Gemara is going to mention soon, do we say that you can't. In other words, all of this we're talking about is as opposed to if there's a hole, and later on, as we're going to talk about in a minute, if then scar tissue or membrane or scar tissue or whatever developed over it, then it would still be terefa. Why? Because that wasn't there all along. It wasn't there when the hole formed, or it wasn't there when the animal was born, depending on how you learn in Rashi's words. The Ra'ah learns that din applies only to the esophagus and to the lungs, which are the two cases that the Mishnah is going to talk about, that the Gemara is going to talk about soon. Only there do we say that if something developed afterwards, scar tissue grew over it, then it would still be treifa, whereas it doesn't apply to other organs, but the majority of Rishonim disagree with him and learn like that. Next, the Amr of Yisuf, Rabbi Yosef, Amr of Yechon, on the fifth statement in these chain of statements, Nikav HaKurban, last one in the simon. We have kurkavan, so now let's talk about if there's a hole in the kurkavan, which is the gizzard of a bird. So here we're going to focus on birds. So animals, we talked about before, have four stomachs. Kosher animals have four stomachs, and then we talked about yesterday the digestive process as it goes through all of them. Birds have a whole different digestive process. They, for one thing, they don't have teeth, so they can't break down their food like that. When they eat, first of all, the food goes down into a pouch inside their neck called the crop. In Hebrew, it's called the zephyr. We're going to talk about it later in our perek as being one of the simonim of kosher birds. It starts to get partially digested and broken down over there. Then it goes down into the kurkuban, which in English is called the gizzard, which is a muscular kind of stomach that sort of grinds up the food mechanically and gets it so that now it's broken down finely enough for the nutrients of it to be able to get into the bird's bloodstream. So now let's talk about that kurkuban, about that gizzard, that muscular stomach of the bird. In other words, when it comes to an animal's or a person's stomach, mostly what does the job is digestive juices that break down the food. With a bird, it's more mechanical grinding action. So therefore, it's much tougher in that connection. So, if the kurkuban, if this gizzard has a hole in it, the kishalai kayam, but the pouch around it is the pouch of it is intact, kosher, then the bird would be kosher. Almost all the Mephoshim understand that the kiss actually means, now usually in this paradigm when we talk about kiss, we usually mean an outer layer that covers the organ. For example, later on in the paradigm we're going to talk about the kiss of the heart, which is the pericardium, which is a layer that surrounds the heart and protects it. Similarly, we're going to have other examples like that of kiss, meaning a layer around an organ that protects it. Here, most of the Mephoshim understand that the kiss is actually the inner the inner layer of that, of the bird's stomach, which is very rough and which helps grind up the food. So in other words, the idea would be that even if the muscles around it are have a hole in them, big deal, food is not going to leak out of there into the body cavity because the inner pouch, which is what the food actually is in and gets ground up in there, is still intact. So that would be coughing. Okay, the Gemara asks Iboilus, and now they have a question. What about the other way around? Nikavakis, the Kokuban Kayamai. What about the other way around? What if that inner layer has a puncture in it, but the outer layer, the muscular layer, still has is still intact? Mai, what would be the din? So the Gemara says, Toshma, the Amr Rav Nachman, Nikav Zebeloizeh. The answer is, Rav Nachman says that if one of them, but not the other one, has a hole, and in fact, the Bach adds, it doesn't just mean not just Zeb, but Loizeb, one without the other. The Bach, Avois Bach, adds in the Gemara, the words Oizesh, Loikeneged Zeb, or one not opposite the other. So the inner pouch has a hole in one area, and the outer muscular layer has a hole in a different area. Then Rav Nachman says kosher, that it would be kosher because nothing's going to leak out because it'll be blocked by the other one. Okay. So now in this connection, let's talk about other organs that have two layers. Omar Rava, Shnei Oris Yeshle Levesh. The esophagus has two layers, two skins, meaning two layers. Hachitzin Odim Ufimi Lavan. The outer one is red, the inner one is white. The outer one is muscular, basically. That's the muscle contractions of it that help get the food down into the stomach. And the inner one is white, and it has it's a mucosal layer that helps the food slide down more easily. So says Rava, Nikav Zebeloizeh. Now, if one of them has a hole, but not the other one, kosher, then the animal or the bird would still be kosher. So the Gemara says, Lomi Lameima, Chitzen Odim Apnimi Lavan. Why does Rava have to point out this detail that about the colors, the outer layer and the inner layer? And the answer is, Dikholif Trefa. Because Rava wants you to also know that if they're switched around, then the animal or the bird would be Trefa. So that could mean, for example, it could be, for example, because of disease that causes it to change color. It could be whatever the reason would be. But if the colors are switched around, then it would be today. So we shouldn't even discuss. What about if only one of them changed color? Let's say now both of them are red or both of them are white. Would that be a problem? And there's different opinions of the Shonim on that subject. They also talk about that by chickens, for example, it's really very hard to see that there are these two layers. The whole thing basically seems to be white, but that's normal. One interesting thing in that regard, we often talk about in Hasidus that red and white represent respectively Gvura and Chesed. So here we're saying, if they're switched around, if Gvura is where Chesed should be, or vice versa, then you have a problem. Now we have a question. So we said that if only one of these layers of the esophagus has a hole, then the creature is still kosher. What about if each of them has a hole, but they're not in the same place? They're not, obviously, there's no question if they have a hole, right, one right next to the other, going all the way through both layers in the same place. Then of course the creature would be terefa, because then food is going to leak out of the esophagus and it's going to damage the body on the inside. But what about if you have a hole in one part of the esophagus in one place and in another? And also the same question would be as far as the kurkavan, as far as the gizzard, if both of them have holes but the holes are in different places. Now, before Hagoy Sabach had said that in Rav Nachman's statement, he had added the words that in the Gemara, that if Zesh Shalai connected there, it would be kosher. But here, the Gemara apparently is going according to the Gersa without that. So the Gemara says, Omar Mazutra, Mishmei de Rapapa, the Vesh kosher, by the esophagus, such a thing would be kosher. The Kurkavan possible, but by the Kurkavan, by the gizzard, it would be possible. Why? Because Rashi points out, in the gizzard, the food stays there for a while it's getting digested. So now you have eventually what's going to happen is it's going to start infiltrating through the one hole, and eventually it's going to make its way between that layer and the other one. It's going to reach the other hole and leak out into the bottom. On the other hand, by the esophagus, the food goes down there. It didn't spend that much time in the esophagus, so therefore he says there's not a problem. Therefore Mazurka says that there's no problem with that. However, the Gemara says, Maskis or Ravasi. However, Ravasi says, I have a problem with that. Adrab, you could argue the other way around. Vesh the ochlabe, when it comes to the esophagus, it eats with it. Opoyabe, and it also moves or makes its noise or whatever using the windpipe, which is right next to it. And as we talked about yesterday, the windpipe is attached. To the esophagus along most of its length. So when the animal is mooing or whatever, otherwise making noise, that'll cause the windpipe to enlarge, and therefore that'll also affect the esophagus next to it. And meanwhile, you also have food itself that goes through the esophagus, and therefore it's constantly stretching and shrinking. So therefore it tends to do that. It gets smaller and it gets larger all the time. So therefore zimli the mahanzin bahadi adali. So therefore it's very possible for those two holes to eventually coincide, even though they're in different places, but because of that stretchiness of the esophagus, therefore they can sometimes meet up. Sometimes, for example, you eat a lot at once and you feel it feels very uncomfortable in your neck and in your upper chest. That's because you stretched out the esophagus more than it's supposed to normally be. Sometimes a drink of water or something will help wash it down and you'll feel better. But that's the windpipe has to. The Rabbi Israel Belsfield, Lashalom, points out he was an expert in these halachas, and there's a lot of details that he taught the next generation of shochtim and vodkim. But he points out, the windpipe always has to remain open because you got to breathe. Therefore, Hashem made it, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, we talked about that it had these rings of cartilage that surround it that keep it constantly open, as opposed to the esophagus. You don't eat. Sometimes you eat, sometimes you don't. So therefore, so to save space, kind of, it usually stays like kind of bunched up. But it's long, in terms of its width, in terms of its cross section, most of the time it's kind of bunched up there. But then when you eat, then it enlarges in order to let the food down. So therefore, Rav Ashi argues that the esophagus, because of that stretchiness and shape-shiftingness of it, therefore, so sometimes, so even if holes are in different places, they may eventually coincide. Kukav under Menach Naya, as opposed to Rav Ashi argues, when it comes to the gizzard, after all, stays in place. Kidikoi koi. So nothing stretches, nothing shrinks over there. So as it stays is how it stays. So there are two holes, but the two holes are never going to meet up, are never going to meet up together. So therefore, in other words, Rav Ashi says, what are you talking about, Marzutra, that with the kurkuban it should be treif, because eventually it'll infiltrate and eventually reach the other. How is it going to if these two layers don't really move one relative to the other? So the Gemara says, Amalei Rav Acha Breid Rav Yosef Rav Ashi, you should know, Hochi Aminim, Mishmeid Marzutra, Domo Mishmeid Rapapa Kavasech. You should know, this is how we say, the way you had it reported was in fact backwards. We say in our yeshiva, in the name of Marzutra, that said in the name of Rapapa, exactly the way you said it, that it's possible, that sort of thing would make it trade. By the esophagus, but we talked about the kurkuban. And that's the halacha. So if you have holes in the kurkuban, even in both layers, then it's not treif unless the holes are exactly one through to the other. When it comes to the esophagus, it's going to be treif, even if the holes are in different places. With that said, there are poskim that talk about maybe if the holes are like on a completely different side of the esophagus, if you have, let's say, one of them is on the right side of the esophagus and the other one on the left, maybe there's not a problem. Maybe those kinds of things are not ever going to meet up. The Omar Rabba says another din, when we had actually before, a few lines ago, when we said Omar Rava, so it seems that it should be Rabba, because now we're continuing with the Omar Rabba that Rabba also said. So Rabba also says, Krum Sha'ola Machmas Maka, if a membrane or scar tissue grew because of an injury, because of a wound, beveshed in the esophagus, in a krum, it's not considered to be a valid covering, it's not considered to be a valid membrane, even if it's thick, because it's not going to last. Eventually, as the animal eats, and again, as the esophagus stretches and shrinks, then it's going to end up having a hole again. Rashi refers to a Gemara in Yevamos that mentions the same thing. Now again, here's where Rashi points out the basic concept that when it comes to holes in treifas, we're not going to say that the animal is kosher unless what covers the hole was there all along. So again, Rashi gives the example we had before with the gallbladder and the liver. We're going to have the example later on with the lung and the chest wall. So, and again, you have the difference among achronim in understanding what Rashi means by that. Does he mean that it just has to be something that's there to begin with? So even if it wasn't there at the moment of the hole, but eventually it comes to cover it, then it would be fine. Or do we mean that it has to actually be that it was born with it that way? With that particular part covering it. And again, we have the Ra'ah saying before that's only as far as the windpipe that the Gemara says here, and the lungs that the Gemara is going to say later on in a few plot, but not other ones, but most of the Rishonim disagree with him. So the idea is basically that, again, you know, you're going to have, you have it, it closed up now, but there's nothing to prevent it from reopening again, and you'll have a hole there as you had to begin with. So therefore, whatever, in a case where you have a hole, then it's going to be safe, even if scar tissue grew up around it. One thing that came up in this regard, that there was a famous shaila that came up some 30 years ago, there's a lot of times that cows have a problem called bloat. Basically, what happens is with all the grass and hay and everything that they eat, and we talked about yesterday how how bacteria start breaking it down in their first stomach in the woman, that produces a lot of gases that have to be vented somehow. And sometimes you have there's too much of it, and the animal is suffering a lot of discomfort with all that gas built up. So they developed a method where they make a puncture in the side of the animal and into the woman in order to vent out that air. Sometimes you even have cows, like, they'll put in a tube like that, and it'll remain like that for years. It became a big shaila, because here we said that if the woman has a hole in it, the animal is safer. So there was a huge amount of discussion. I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, Rabbi Cyril Belsky, all of our fellows, he got involved, a number of other Rabbanim got involved. The upshot was that they had to develop, and the problem is also, we're going to learn later on in the Sefta, that kol ha-yotzim and ha-tomei-tomei, whatever comes from something that's non-kosher, is itself non-kosher, which includes the milk of such animals. So now, what are you going to do as far as milk? So eventually, they worked out a system where for animals that are going to be used for kosher meat and for kosher milk, they're not going to do that method with puncturing a hole in the side. Instead, they're going to use other methods to prevent bloat in the first place, or to vent it in a way that doesn't get into questions of treifus. And part of the issue was also that, again, you make the hole, and afterwards, scar tissue grows up around the hole. Very nice. But the Gemara is saying over here, and again, the vast majority of the Rishonim learn this way, that it doesn't help, and it's still considered that there's a hole there. Okay. Onward. V'omer Rabba. Rabba says another din. Vesh en lebedikim v'achutz. You can't check, if you're concerned that there might be a hole in the esophagus, you can't check it from the outside, because we just said that the outer layer of it is red. So the red outer layer, you're not going to easily notice a hole in it, or in particular, you're not going to easily notice if there's a drop of blood on it. Elabifnim, you can only check from the inside, because the inside being white, if there's blood over there, then it'll stand out. The Tiferes Yaakov brings up a point that he one time checked and found that, after all, you know, it's true that the outer layer is red, but he says the inner side of the outer layer, where if you peel them apart one from another, is not so red. So he argues that maybe it just means you can't check it from the outside, but maybe you can check it on the inside of the outer layer. Or the simple meaning would be that you can only check it by turning the esophagus inside out and checking the white layer. So the Gemara says, "Lamai nafkamina, what is the practical difference that we need to know from that statement of Rabba?" And the answer is, l'sofek drusa. If you have an animal where we don't know whether it's been attacked by a predator, we're going to have examples later on in our parrot where we think that an animal might have been attacked by a predator, but we're not sure. We're there. What we need to do is, after we checked it, we need to check very carefully to see if there's any redness that would have been caused by that clawing of the animal. Like we talked about yesterday, that redness would indicate infection or whatever it indicates exactly. So we need to check for it very carefully. So now the Gemara explains over there, Rashi brings it, that when it comes to the simonim, the windpipe and the esophagus, we need to check whether they themselves became red. So we're not even talking about, again, that there's a hole in them yet, but they become red, and eventually over time, that poison or that infection or whatever goes and penetrates through it and causes a hole. So now, again, the problem is you're not going to even be able to tell that. So not even we're looking for a drop of blood per se. We're looking actually even just for the redness that was caused by the Jerusalem attack. But nevertheless, because that outside layer is red, therefore you're not going to be able to tell. But it comes out from Rashi also, it comes out from Rashi earlier in the Masechta, that it is also relevant where you're concerned that there's an actual hole there. We had a case earlier, in the previous parak, where there's a blood, there was a bird whose neck was dripping blood, so it obviously had gotten injured someplace in its neck, but we weren't sure whether the esophagus might have been punctured, so we talked over there about a son of Rav, Rav Yosef, had suggested that what we need to, how we can do it, how we check one simen and then we turn it inside out and check it. So we see then that this din applies not just to drusa but to holes as well. In fact, a number of rishonim asked on Rashi that according to that, why does the Gemara need to ask what and say nafkamina is dafka by a drusa? Yeah, it should apply to any case like that where we have a doubt about whether there's a hole. So, okay, the Rashba says maybe because the Gemara wants to find a more common case, drusa is more common, more than should be developed a hole because of a thorn or a puncture or anything like that. But okay. In any case, on top of that, also, Rashi later in the Masechta explained that this whole concept of checking only applies to a soft jurisa, only where we don't know whether it was clawed by a predator, then we can check and see whether we have any redness in there. When you know that it was jurisa, then Rashi said, learns over there that you can't because it might turn red and you just don't notice it. Tosfos over there disagrees. B'chlal, though, the Ramah points out that nowadays we generally don't are considered that we don't have the expertise to be able to tell such things. So many times in such halachas, when we're going to say you have to check for something, many times the practical halacha, at least for Ashkenazim, is going to be that we have to declare it treif misafik because we don't have the expertise to be able to tell the exact symptoms that the Gemara is looking for. Okay. So the Gemara tells how he suffered drusa da asoi like I made the rabba. There was one time they brought a case like that of a suffix of an animal that had been clawed that was brought before rabba. Now rabba was checking the outside of the esophagus, which we just said you're not supposed to do. Amalei Abayas, Abayas says, "Well, Mahu Dama, didn't you Rebbe yourself just say vesh en lebdika elamufnim that you can only check the esophagus on the inside, because on the outside you wouldn't be able to tell, because again, either if you're looking for blood, you may not notice it because of the redness, or even if you're looking for redness from the flooring, you also might not be able to see it against the red background." So why are you checking it that way? So, apre rova obanke. So indeed, Rabba turned it inside out and checked it, and checked it on the inside. Now, the Rosh points out, look, because you should have to check on both the inside and the outside. After all, there is that concern, again, that the poison or venom or infection or whatever you want to call it from the drisa, maybe, again, it penetrates through. And therefore, so even if you don't find anything on the inside, maybe it penetrated through only the outer layer. And you can't tell because you can't do bedika on it. So the Ramban explains that, look, if you check the inside and you don't find anything, you find no redness, then therefore it means we can assume there's no problem on the outside as well. There was no drisa at all, given that after all we're only talking about suffix drisa. The Rosh points out another point. Look, it's only a suffix drusa, and it's impossible to check the outside, so therefore the Chachamim are going to be makel and say, fine, just check on the inside. In any case, Rabbi did that. He turned it inside out. The ishtaka chalei tshei kurti dama, and he found there two drops of blood, metarifa, and he declared it treif on that basis, because that obviously shows that there was a drissa, that there was an attack after all, which is the term that the Gemara and the Rishonim and Acharonim use for it. Eres literally means poison or venom, so we'll call it that, whether it's an actual chemical poison or not, but whatever. That eres obviously penetrated, and therefore that's why you find blood on the inside of the esophagus. The Rabba Nami, so now Rabba also, when he to begin with, but checking the outside, he knew, of course, that you have to check the inside, but he wanted to sharpen Abaya and see if Abaya would realize that that's not right, and you need to check on the inside, and indeed Abaya passed the test. Sometimes the Rambam points out when a Rebbe is teaching his Talmidim, sometimes he has to do that. He has to do something, say or do something that seems to be incorrect, in order to test them and see whether they're going to catch it. And Gemara continues, Amar Ola, Yoshev like Kotz Vavesh, if a thorn got stuck in the animal's esophagus, En Choshed Shema Hivri. So now, if we don't find, so let's say, for example, Rashi says it ate something that had thorns in it, and the thorn got stuck in there, but you don't see any puncture on the outside, nor do you see after you shecht. So you don't see after you shecht it, you don't see any puncture on the outside, and you don't see any blood on the inside of the esophagus. So says Abaya, En Choshesh in Shema Hivri. You do not need to be concerned that Hivri. Now, Hivri can have two meanings that are almost opposite meanings. Hivri can be Meloshin Bori, Meloshin Healthy. So it would mean, in other words, you don't have to worry that in fact that there was a hole and now it healed, and the fact that you don't see a hole is because it healed, and we just said before that wouldn't work. We're not concerned about that, says Ola. Then Rashi brings, so that's the first explanation Rashi brings. The second explanation is that the word Hebrew, on the contrary, means to penetrate. You have a word, Vere Oysam B'chai Oysam in Yechezkel, that means he will pierce them with his sword. So we see that the word Hebrew, the word Bara, can also mean to pierce through. The order similarly explained, the word Bara in Bara, whatever, in Aramaic, means outside, so the Hebrew means to go to the outside. So then it would be the other way around. We don't have to be concerned that the thorn punctured through to the outside. So Rashi points out, Rashi had said that there was no sign of a puncture on the outside, and there was no blood on the inside. Tosfos says you don't even need that. Even if you found blood on the inside, if there's nothing on the outside, since we're not concerned, Shema Hivri, that it may have punctured, or it may have been healed, or whatever. And again, we said before, if only one layer was punctured of the esophagus, then you're still fine. So Ula is saying you don't have to be concerned that in fact it went all the way through. Okay. So the Gemara brings you another siman for the next few statements that we're going to be asking questions on Ola. Doras Hatichas Besachim Tmeya siman. The siman is these four words, which again are key words from the next four things that the Gemara is going to bring to ask on Ola. And then here also Rav Dovin Paro gives an explanation on the Kabbalah that means that this whole thing with the windpipe, he says, has to do with dinim, with gvuros, and with whatever. But then you have that choshen shema hivri, is there maybe nesutzis, is there maybe sparks of kedusha that are escaping, and we have to go and gather them together, and doras chatichos, and even though the predator maybe clawed and attacked those pieces, those sparks of kedusha, the sack and smear, using a non-kosher, using a tummy knife, nevertheless, we have the ability to go and gather those chatichas, those little bits and pieces together, and bring them back to kedusha. Okay. So the Gemara asks, first of all, Ola, my shenam is Safek Durusa. So according to Ola, why would it be any different than Safek Durusa? We just said before that if Safek Durusa, then, and we have examples later on in the Perek. For example, a lion went into an area where there were a bunch of animals, and we don't know, so we don't know whether it attacked any of them. We're going to have later on in the Perek, we're going to have details about when we have to be concerned and when not. So over there, we have to be concerned that it may have predated them. So why over here are we saying we don't have to be concerned that the thorn may have pierced? And the answer is Kasaba Ula in Hushin, the Safek Durusa, because Ula holds that Rav over there who says that we're not concerned about Safek Durusa, and therefore then in a case like that, and therefore there's no problem. So that's one answer on Rashi. By the way, when we have before this Hivri, the two explanations in Rashi, so the Maram Shif and the Prima Godim and the Sefer Rosh Yosef both explain that we had before the different opinions of whether you can shecht the vesh on the outside or not. So if we say that you could, so therefore we're going to have to check the outside, but if we don't find anything, we don't have to be concerned that maybe it punctured and maybe healed afterwards. Whereas the second opinion would be on the other opinion that say that you can only check in the inside in the first place, and checking on the outside is really useless, So therefore, so we're talking about then is the concern that maybe it punctured through, and we're saying that no, if you don't find any evidence of it. So why would Ullah say that case is different than Safed Jerusa? And the answer is because Rav in fact holds that Safed Jerusa is not Osir. So therefore, in keeping with that, then therefore he holds that also in this case of the thorn, we don't have to be concerned. Okay, the Gemara says, "Ma'ishna mishtei chatichas achas shalchelav achas shalchelav." Fine. Why wouldn't Ullah say that it's any different? Now, later on in the paragraph, Tosfos points out, we are going to learn that we are concerned about Safek Jerusa, and that would mean, in that case, we would have to say that if there is a thorn in the windpipe, we would have to say not like Ullah. We would, in fact, have to say that we have to be concerned that maybe it did puncture through. And Tosfos discusses that in terms of certain dinim about sfeikas and things like that. So one thing is, Tosfos points out, Jerusa is a very common thing for predators to attack animals, and therefore when there's a suffix in it, we have to be concerned that it really happened. The second question, according to Ullah, why is it different than a case of two pieces, achas shel chelev v'achas shel shomen, where one of them is chelev and one of them is shomen, whereas we learned a few days ago, if a person eats one of them and he's not sure which one, then he's going to have to bring an awesome toddler. So we see that when there's a suffix issue, you're not allowed to eat it. How can Ullah say over here that because there's a suffix, then it's fine? Rashi explains that the question is specifically that we're saying that it requires an Oshem Tari. That's the point. You know, obviously, Ullah is not going to hold you allowed to eat one of the two chatichas, but fine, we're saying there's an issur to eat, but nevertheless, maybe he's not chayv in a korban. But the fact that we see that it's a korban, we see that he's even chayv in a korban, means it's an absolute suffix, so then in that case, how could Ullah say that it's fine? And the answer is, Hosm is chazik isura. There's a chazakah of an issue. We know that there's an item of issue over there, whereas here we do not. Here we don't know whether the animal was attacked by a predator, or in this case whether the thorn made a hole made a hole in the esophagus or not. So therefore there was no cheskas issue. Tosfos points out, it is true, so when you have one piece over there, you don't have a chazaka of Isser, but nevertheless, fine, it's still also to eat, but over here, after all, the animal had a cheskas kashrus, fine, it was also as Eivim and Achai, so you couldn't eat it, but nevertheless, it had a cheskas kashrus, as most animals do, and therefore we don't have to be concerned for a topic that it was today. In fact, that's a general rule we're going to have in this parak, is that most of the time, when we have a topic, whether an animal is today or not, usually we can allow it because that's cheskas kashrus. So to begin with, and for that reason also, we don't have to check for most trefas. Most trefas that are uncommon, we don't have to check for in the shlachtos to make sure that it didn't have that. Only certain ones where there's a mir tamotzuri, there's at least a significant minority. Classically, that's the example with things in the lungs. So they always have to check the lungs, but there are other examples as well, here and there. So then you do have to check for those. But otherwise, we don't say that you have to check because it has a cheskas kashrus. So the Gemara says, fine. What about a case that we had earlier in the Masechta where a person shechts with a knife and afterwards he finds that there's a nick in the knife and he has to say that it's also misophic because it may have developed the nick while you were cutting through the skin before you even reached the simonim? So we see over there that because of a suffix it's also. So why over here should Ullah say it's mutter? And the answer is Hossam is Yalabay Usa Basakin. Fine, because there we have an obvious defect in the knife. Now we can see that the knife has a nick in it, and therefore that doesn't allow us to follow the chazaka of before that it was a good knife. So fine, it has chazaka, it had a cheskas kashrus to begin with, but at the end we see that chazaka has obviously been broken. As opposed to over here, all we see is that there's a thorn in the esophagus. We don't see that it actually passed through both, so we don't have to be concerned that maybe it actually did. Okay. The Gemara asked, "My Shem is Suffolk Tumah Rishos Yochid. How about why would Ullah say that it's different than the case of a Suffolk of Tumah in Rishos Yochid, the Sekei Tomei, where we have the din that whenever you have a Suffolk in Rishos Yochid, whether something is Tomei or something or someone is Tomei or Tahor." Then we say that he's Tomei. Rishus HaYachid for this part, for this purpose, mostly is the same definition as Rishus HaYachid for Shabbos, but not completely. There are certain cases that are considered Rishus HaYachid for Shabbos, but are considered Rishus HaRabim for Tumah. Basically, the idea is if you have three or more people over there, then it's considered Rishus HaRabim, and that's considered Rishus HaRabim. So the Gemara says, well, according to your Svara, that you're even asking the question, why are you comparing it to Suffolk Tumah Rishus HaYachid, the Dami of Suffolk Tumah Rishus HaRabim? Instead, just as well compare it to Suffolk Tumah and Rishus HaRabim, the sacred Tahar, where the Suffolk is Tahar. And then it would prove what Ula is saying. Ella, no, you have to answer, there's a big difference. Hossam, the Suffolk community, Lami Soita, there we have a din that we learn from a Soita. With a sota, you have a suffix, whether she became tamei, and we're saying that's by definition, Rosh Hashayachin, because she's alone with only one man, and therefore we say because of the suffix, she's tamei until she drinks the water. From there we learn this concept of suffix tumah, Rosh Hashayachin. Of course, we're not talking about the same kind of tumah. They were talking about tumah as in znus. Here we're talking about tumah of tumah v'tara, but nevertheless, from that we learn the dinim of tumah v'tara, that if it takes place in Rosh Hashayachin, then the suffix, we have to consider it also. We have to consider it tummy. So we learn it from that. So therefore, there's no real reason, there's no real logic behind that, why we should say that there's a difference between that and Rosh Hashanah. So therefore, you can't learn from that. So therefore, you can't really learn from that to other cases. So fine. That question is not really a question, but yeah, the other questions we already answered. So therefore, there's nothing contradicting what Ula says. Well, the Gemara continues, though, no. Yosef Ahumen Abbanon Kameh de Rav Kahana. One of the Chachamim was sitting in front of Rav Kahana as a Talmud, the Yosef Kama, he was sitting and saying, Nimtzis Itmar. When we say that if you see that if there's a thorn in the wind in the esophagus, then the animal is still kosher, that would only be if you found it in there. So you just found it, and we're saying there's no concern that it was punctured. Abo Yoshav, but if it's actually stuck into the, if it's actually stuck into the esophagus, Kaishin, and that we do have to be concerned that it may have punctured both of them. We don't see a puncture, but now it might mean that there was krovak masnaka. Now it really might be that it healed over it, and that it might be. I'm moving over here, please don't make noise.
Looking for a safer.
Okay, but look for the safer and don't make noise unnecessarily, please. Okay.
It's not unnecessary.
Oh yes. Okay. Yeah. So this Talmud says in front of Rakana, Abu Yoshav, but if it actually got stuck into one of the layers of the esophagus, then we have to be concerned, Cheshin, and we do have to be concerned that maybe actually it went through both layers. So maybe it went through both layers and now it's healed and now you can't check it because it's covered over and you don't see. According to the second explanation in Rashi. Now earlier we had the two explanations in Rashi, or when we said that when Ula had said in Choshen Shemeh Hivri, and again the first explanation of Hivri is that it healed, and the second one is that it punctured through. So the Maharam Shif points out over here, based on this, you're gonna have two different explanations of what we're saying over here. Are we concerned here where it's actually stuck into the wall of the esophagus that it might indeed have punctured both of them and now got healed, and now we can't then now we can't check? Or does it mean that maybe both of them were punctured and we can't check because you can't check the esophagus from the outside because, again, since it's red, you're not going to notice a small hole? So that's what this Talmud is saying, that there's a difference between whether you find the thorn in there, it's lying there along the length of the esophagus versus where it punctured. Omalu Rav Kahana, lo tzitzisulei, but Rav Kahana says to the other Talmudim, don't listen to what he's saying. Yoshav Ikmar, because what Ula had said was even if it's actually stuck into the wall, that he said that we're not concerned Shemahivri. Album Nimsis Lo Itzuch Leila Ula, but says Rav Kahana, if you just found it in there, you don't even need Ula to be telling us that it's kosher. The Kulu Chavid Buryosa Kotzi Ochon. After all wild animals often eat thorns, and it doesn't make them traitor. They know how to swallow them generally without puncturing anything. So if you just find a thorn in there, there's no chiddush that it's kosher. But if it Ula was saying, even if it punctured. Nevertheless, the Poskim Paskin, according to what this Talmud said, that only when Nimtzis, if you found it in there, but if it actually punctured one of the walls, the inner wall, then indeed we do need to be concerned that it punctured all the way through. Again, according to the different possibilities, either that it punctured and then that scar tissue grew up over it, or that or that maybe it punctured all the way through and we can't even tell because you can't really check the outside, and therefore the result is going to be teref. Only when you have nimtzes, when you just found it in there, lying in there along the length, then you have no problem. Actually, the Ramah brings that yesh machshirin, that there are some who say it's kosher if you don't find blood on the outside, that we're not so concerned shema hivri. And he goes on to say that we're mekel. He says in particular, he says that Ramah talks about when they force feed ducks, for example. You have, let's say, for example, to make foie gras, or whatever, however it's pronounced, I don't know how it's pronounced, but whatever, when they force feed geese to have them develop a fatty liver, which is considered a delicacy, so then Ramah points out, they often force feed them, and among the food they feed them is things that might conceivably puncture the windpipe. So Ramah says we do have to check it, because this kind of thing, just like we have to check for holes in the lungs, the same way we have to check with these fattened geese, because it's very common for them to develop those kinds of tinnitus. But if we don't find anything, if we don't find blood on the outside or a hole all the way through, then we can be makel in it. On the other hand, Ramah says maybe we have to be careful. It isn't Isser Daraisa. Maybe it would be better, even he says, to not check at all and rely on the roiv rather than to be makel where there's a reisa, where there's a potential problem. So there's discussion among the Achronim about that point, about whether we can in fact check it in such a case or not. Next, the Gemara says Itmar. Now we have another discussion. Turbats have veshed. The turbats, according to some quotes from the word turbats, means courtyard. So the courtyard of the vesh of the esophagus. So this would be what's called in medical terms the pharynx. So you have when an animal or a person swallows food, it passes through there, and then it goes down to the and then it goes down into the esophagus itself. So then the major opinion is that turbats comes from the word tarbits, which is an Aramaic word that means a garden or a court, because like the entryway, it's like the courtyard into the vesh. There's another explanation that turbits comes from a word that means to stay in place, because we're going to talk about now what happens if it gets detached from the jaw. Anyway, Rav Omer B'Mashu. Rav says if there is a hole, even a small hole in there, then the animal will be treif. Well, Shmuel Omer B'Rubai. Shmuel says only if there's a hole in most of it. So the Gemara says Rav Omer B'Mashu. Rav says that it would be treif even if there's a mashu, even if there's a tiny hole in the pharynx, because makom shchitahu. Rav holds that is a valid place for shchita, and the same way as we said in the Mishnah that if there's a hole in the esophagus, then the animal is treif, and we even learned before according to Rava, it may even be considered nevela. So the same way he says over here, as far as the turbits are vesh, as far as the pharynx specifically, Rashi explains this is where it's attached to the jaw. Then the same thing, Rav says it would have the same din as the esophagus itself, and even a small hole in it would make it puffer. Rashi points out, when we learned in the first perek all about the proper place in the neck for shchita, and we talked about how groma, shechting too high up, but all those dinim, we're talking about the windpipe, we never really talked about over there how high up in the esophagus there could be, and so Rav is holding that even to shech the esophagus in the pharynx rather than down in the esophagus itself, the animal would still be kosher. Or Shmuel Amar B'Rubai, where Shmuel says that no, it's shreifa only if the hole covers the majority of it, because he says lav makom shchita, who that's not considered a proper place of the shchita, so therefore it's not considered like so. Yes, the windpipe, the esophagus itself, as the Mishnah had said, a tiny hole will make a treif, but he says over here the turbat tavesh would not be in the same category. So the Gemara says hey new turbat tavesh. How exactly do we define this turbat tavesh? Mori Bar Ma'ukva says in the name of Shmuel, it's like this. The different parts of the esophagus and the pharynx or whatever are made of different kinds of muscular tissue, and therefore they have different properties. When you cut it, and then it widens, in other words, the muscles over there, relax, and therefore the opening of it, the inner surface of it widens. Zehu turbat avesh. That area is defined as turbat avesh. In that area, the muscle tone is such where it's under tension, and when you cut it, then it's able to widen. It's able to spread out more open. But if you cut it and it stays exactly as it is, it doesn't get any bigger, Zeru Vesh Asmai, that would be the esophagus itself. That's how Mori Bama reports in the name of Shmuel. Omalahu Rapapi, but Rapapi tells him, Marla Omahochi, my Rebbe did not say that. Umanu, and who was my Rebbe, who was Rapapi's Rebbe, Rabibi Barabaya. Ella, no, he clarified, it's like this. Kosha Choscha Va'omid Bimakoimai, the part where you shecht it, and it stays exactly where it is. It doesn't widen and it doesn't narrow. Zet Turbet Zavesh. That's the Turbet Zavesh. That's the area that we're talking about over here that Rav and Shmuel are talking about. Ella, Ezo Veshats, right? What would be the definition of the wind of the esophagus itself? Says Rapapi, Kosha Choscha Va'kovitz. On the contrary, you cut it and it shrinks. Because again, you have the esophagus that we talked about before expands and shrinks as the animal as the animal eats or drinks. So now you have the muscles of the esophagus are such that when you cut it, then it's going to shrink down. It's going to shrink the opening of it, the interior of it is going to shrink down in size and then and sort of flatten out. So that's called the vesh itself. Okay, so different definitions of how we define in terms of the muscle tone over there, what the turbits are vesh versus the vesh itself is. So the Gemara tells, and now the Gemara brings another, now the Gemara continues, Yoina, Om Reb Zera, Mavlata. Yoina, says Reb Zera, it means the place of the swallowing. Now there's two different explanations in Rishonim what Yoina means over here. Does it mean, is it Yoina as in the common word, meaning a dog? So then what we're talking about is all this time we've been talking about in general, as far as both animals and birds, now we're going to define when it comes to a dove, specifically what is the area called Turbet Zavesh, and it's the area where the bird swallows its food. The other way of understanding it is that Yoina is the name of a chacham, is the name of someone quoting in the name of Reb Zera, that a different definition, arguing with the previous definition, and saying that the turbits are vesh, the pharynx is defined as mavlata, the place where you swallow the food. Now later on, we're going to learn tomorrow, Best Hashem, on Daphne and Dalin, we're going to talk about what's the size of the turbits are vesh, and we're going to talk about it ad kedei tfisas yad, the size that you can hold with the hand, the size that they can hold with the fingers of your hand. So then, depending on these two explanations, either the statement of Reb Zera is arguing with that or not. Either it's arguing and saying that no, it's a because the Gemara is going to now give a much smaller size than that, or it means it's not arguing. There it's talking about an animal, here it's talking about Yoina, a bird. So the Gemara says, Vakama, how big would that area be? And the answer is, I'm going to give you pochus misa'arta v'odif michitza. It's less than the length of a grain of barley, but it's more than the length of a grain of wheat. A grain of wheat is smaller than a grain of barley, so therefore, so it's somewhere in between those two is the size of the mavlata. Again, are we talking specifically about a bird, or are we talking about in general in animals that you have the difference of whether Yoina meant the bird Yoina, or whether it means the chacham quoting in the name of Reb Zera. So in this connection of the Turbet Zavesh, the Gemara says, Ahu Torah, the Abel of Bnei Rav Ukva, there was an ox that belonged to the sons of Rav Ukva, the Aschobe, the Shchita, the Turbet Zavesh. They started the Shchita in the Turbet Zavesh, which we just said before, Rav said would be fine, and Shmuel says no good. The Goma, the Vesh, and continued the Shchita in the Vesh, in the esophagus itself. So the question, of course, was whether the Shchita is kosher or not. So the Omer Rava. So Rava says, "Ramina alei chumra de Rav v'chumra de Shmuel v'teritna alei." I'm going to apply here a chumra of Rav and the chumra of Shmuel, and I'm going to say by combining those together that this animal is teref. Chumra de Rav, namely the Omer Rav v'mashuv. We just said that Rav had said that if there's even a small hole in Turbet Zavesh, then the animal is teref. So therefore, there has a hole in here because you started shechting in it. Now you're going to say, "Well, Amar Rav Makom Shchitahu," but Rav also said that it's a proper place for Shchita. Says Rav, "No, never mind that. Because Shmuel, in that regard, says Rav, I'm going to go like Shmuel. The Amar Rav Makom Shchitahu. Shmuel says that's not a proper place for Shchita. So therefore, it's not Shchita. It's just a hole, and therefore the animal is going to be chit." Shmuel ha'omar berubay, but didn't Shmuel say that in the Turbet Zavesh it's a problem only if the hole covers most of the Turbet Zavesh, not just a small hole? No, we're going to say, here we're going to apply, but Kedav, here we're going to go back to Rav's opinion, where he says that even a mashu is enough to make it fit. Now, Tosfos points out, the Gemara could have said that Shmuel is just holding, that Rava is just holding like Shmuel, who we talk about in the first parak. We talk about what happens if you started the Shchita in the wrong place, and then I did one third of it over there, you did Hagrama in one third, and then you did two thirds correct. But here the Gemara is saying that no, Rava is not using that reasoning to declare this animal today. But rather he's just saying because he's Machmer by a combination of Rav's and Shmuel's opinions. Well, the Gemara says, Galgam Nilsa, so this matter rolled on, eventually this sack din of Rava became known. And it reached Rav Abba. That Rav Abba was informed of how Rava had passed him. Now, the Gemara is going to ask soon, how could Rava do that? You can't do two chumras that contradict another. But before you didn't come to that, the case came to the Baba. Omalui tells him, Tura, bein the Rav, bein the Shmuel Shari. You should know, on the contrary, this ox will be mutu according to either Rav or Shmuel. Because if you're consistent like either one of them, then it's kosher. According to Rav, it's a perfectly kosher place for Shita. And according to Shmuel, it would only be a problem if the whole covered most of the Tura with Tavesh and not all of it. Now, granted, as Tosfos is saying, according to Shmuel, we might well say it is possible because Shmuel himself held that when you have a groma at the beginning, then it's no good at the end. But at least Rav Abba is saying, you're saying you're doing it by combining chumras. No, according to Rav, at least it should be kosher. And according to Shmuel, fine, it may not be kosher according to Shmuel's own shitta, but you can't say it's safe according to Shmuel by combining his opinion with Rav. And he tells them, Zilu Imrilo, the Breder of Yosef Achama, go tell the son of Rav Yosef Achama, that was Rav's father's name, De La Shalom's made total amore, he's going to have to pay the value of the ox to the owner because he caused it to be treif. He made a wrong psak din because they declared it treif, they already gave it to the dogs to eat. Now, if it had been here, if it had been available in front of us, Rashi points out, this would be what's called Tor B'Dvar Mishnah. He made a mistake in something that's explicit in a Mishnah, or in this case, it's explicit not to follow the Chumras of two Amidoyim, so therefore we would have just said, you know what, let's undo the Psak Din, and after all, the animal was caught. But here, it was already, they had given it to the dogs, and therefore, so Rav Abba says, Rav actually caused a loss to these people, and therefore he needs to pay them. And Tosfos points out that, yeah, usually we have a Tov, exactly that, usually by Tov Dvar Mishnah, we would say Chozer, you just undo the Psak Din, but over here, he actually himself went and gave it to the dogs, and therefore Rav Abba says that Rav is tired to pay for it. But now we'll continue tomorrow, Bas Hashem, and the Gemara is going to ask what was Rav even thinking to do that in the first place? You're not supposed to follow two chumras that are contradictory to one another. So we'll continue that tomorrow, and we'll continue, Bas Hashem, talking more about these dinim of the vesht and the trubitz of vesht and all of that.